This episode of Discover ADN is brought to you by Born Sequel and DB Snitch. DB Snitch is a once-off report service resulting in an in-depth examination of your existing database instances and recommendations to bring them up to industry standards, ensuring that your data is safe. DB Snitch gives you a comprehensive view of where your database currently stands, along with a customized game plan to get it to where it needs to be. Of course, Born Sequel offers both on-site and remote support. Find out more at bornsequel.ca/dbsnitch or by contacting Randolph West via email at info@bornsequel.ca with the keyword Discover in the subject line.
Welcome to episode 22 of Discover ADN. My name is Jeremy Chirfus, and I'm the host of today's program. The goal of Discover ADN is to learn more about the many creative, intelligent, and interesting people who use app.net to communicate with the world, as well as offer us a chance to attach a voice to the words and avatars we see flowing through our timelines. Want to be in the show or recommend somebody you think is interesting? Get in touch on app.net by sending a message to Discover ADN. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Jason Irwin, who goes by the pseudonym Matigo on app.net. He's an immigrant to Japan, has a very happy puppy, and calls himself a budding podcaster. He actually created Discover ADN, and it's a real treat for me to be guest host on his podcast. So please join me in welcoming Jason to Discover ADN. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So, Jason, when did you join app.net?
Well, according to Felix, I joined app.net on March 1st of 2013.
Oh, so quite a latecomer.
Yeah, there's actually a funny story behind that. Much like Rabrist, I was having credit card problems in that I didn't have one. So I needed to wait until app.net allowed people to sign up without a credit card. And on March 1st, that's when anybody with an invitation could join. What's interesting is that Remino had sent me an invitation months beforehand, but I couldn't use it because I didn't have a credit card.
And it seems like you were kind of aware of app.net and trying to get onto app.net, but why, in the end, why did you want to join?
I wanted to join because I wanted a place where I could be creative, where I could really express myself. I have 75,000 tweets on Twitter. I certainly expressed myself a lot on that social network. The problem is, in the year before I left Twitter, the service had become very, very negative, or the people that I was following, I should say, became very, very negative. Everything had some kind of bad spin, whether it was politics-related, sports-related, or anything. It was just very negative, and that brought me down. That killed a lot of my creative energy. In addition to this, everybody started sharing links without any context. They would just throw a t.co link into the timeline with some Gizmodo-like headline that made no sense whatsoever, and I didn't see any reason why I should click those links. I don't use the web the same way as an ordinary person. I don't want to visit websites. I want to get information. I want to be creative. Twitter wasn't offering that anymore.
One of the interesting things I've found in leaving Twitter and coming to app.net is Twitter is good for breaking news. I mean, you will hear about things on Twitter. So do you still keep an eye on your Twitter feed?
No, not at all.
Okay. Let's move on. You use a pseudonym on the service, and I learned by listening to Rabris that it's Matigo rather than Matigo, which is how I've always imagined it. So where does Matigo come from?
Matigo is actually short for a longer name, Abel Matigo, which I got when I first joined the internet. This goes all the way back to 1997, when I got online with AOL. People who lived in North America will probably remember receiving floppy disks and CD-ROMs in everything, offering 10 hours or 15 hours of free internet service if you went online with AOL. So I took advantage of that. But when we joined AOL, we had to give a unique username. And so after all of my friends had signed in, it became my turn. And I had remembered seeing the name Ablematigo in a chat room on a previous session. And I thought that was rather unique, so I took it. There was just one little problem with the name. Ablematigo is 10 characters long, and at the end of the 90s, I was very active on IRC, particularly the EFNet network. And that network has a limit of 9 characters for usernames, so I needed something shorter. So for the longest time, I just took Able. But later on, I went with the other half, and I've been Matigo ever since 2004, 2005.
And, I mean, forgive my ignorance, is Able Matigo a name? Is it a person's name? What is it?
According to Google, it's nothing. I've been looking for the origin to this name for over a decade, and I've come up with nothing.
So you're basically a very early identity thief.
Oh, very much so, yes. But Matigo is very much mine now. If you type that name into Google or Yahoo, you will find me and somebody in Paraguay. That's it.
And one of the things that's come out as a result of your interviews on Discover ADN is that different people have different reasons for using either their real name or indeed a pseudonym. Now, a lot of us, like me, who use our real name, we say, well, we stand by everything we say. Why do you use a pseudonym?
I use a pseudonym because I have always used a pseudonym. It would have been crazy in the mid to late 90s for somebody to use their real name on the internet. Back then, everybody had some kind of handle, some kind of anonymity. That changed with the advent of Facebook, but because I have very rarely used Facebook, because I've been using IRC and Twitter and all these other places where nicknames are more common, I've just decided to keep it forward. Now, I do stand behind everything I say. My blog, for example, is jasonirwin.ca. There's no mistake that is me. It's just, I've decided to keep my name. And also, when I joined app.net, we were required to use the same name there as we had on Twitter. So rather than wait for the opportunity to use my full name,
so it's more
I
like,
just decided
I mean,
to
really, it's more like
keep
a nickname
going with
than
Matigo.
A pseudonym in that sense. You're not hiding behind it.
No, I'm not hiding behind anything. Like I said, you type Matigo into Google, you'll see Jason Irwin right beside it.
Well, one of the interesting things about your presence on app.net is that we find you everywhere, too. I mean, it's not as if you, although you are a developer, I would say, you contribute to all kinds of different discussions. Is that part of the value of app.net for you?
You find me everywhere. I'm not sure how to parse that. Are you saying that I post too much?
Let me specify. You welcome new people. You help people. You are contributing to development. You jump into a discussion when you have a helpful suggestion. That's what I mean by finding you everywhere. I don't think it's a bad thing. But I just wondered whether it's something that's of value to you in ADN.
Oh, it's absolutely of value. Helping people is what I do all day, every day. Even in the day job, I don't help people with tech per se, but I do help people with language. I help people with business skills. I'm always taking and answering questions. That's what I do. Heck, I've been doing this since I was a know-it-all teenager and could explain anything in the universe. This is what I love doing. As for contributing to discussions, if you were to talk to anybody who knew me in real life, whether it's Renko or JapChap, they would sigh and admit that it's next to impossible to shut me up when I begin talking about some subjects.
And this is a tricky question, but I know you've asked everybody else the same question, so I feel I ought to. I mean, and the reason it's tricky is obvious to anyone who follows you on app.net. What do you do in your spare time?
I think Red Queen Coder said it best when she asked, what is spare time?
Downtime.
Well, this is going to be a boring answer, but I sleep. And you can see that because I quite often post my sleep cycle patterns.
You do?
Yeah, so boring as it may sound, I sleep when I'm not busy.
And when do you sit quietly and think?
I do that on the train. Just about every day I spend 90 to 120 minutes on the train going from one place to another, and that's when I disconnect from the world. Occasionally I will take my phone out and post a message or something like that, but typically when I'm sitting on the train, that is my time to close my eyes and think about problems, think about creative things.
You've contributed a lot to app.net by allowing us to blog, for example, by sending private messages to 10 centuries. What would you like to see more of on app.net?
Well, so far, a lot of people have answered this question by saying they want to see more people. And while that would be nice, what I really want to see on app.net is more debate. We have a lot of very intelligent people who are not afraid to tackle hot topics, whether it's rape culture or gender inequality or the rights of certain individuals. By reading and participating in these conversations, we can learn more about the world around us. A lot of the ideas that I have in my own head, I can guarantee 50% of them are completely wrong and the other 50% are incomplete. So by seeing how other people view a situation, I can fill in the gaps in my own knowledge and also find out where I'm wrong, because like anybody, I hate being wrong. So if there's something in my head that needs to be fixed, then by communicating with people on app.net, I can learn these things. One specific example that I can think of happened just a few days ago where the question came up, why is a father okay with their son going out and having sex, but uncomfortable with their daughter having sex? As somebody who has five sisters, I have seen firsthand the protectiveness that a man can have towards their daughters or towards women, particularly when it comes to sex. This is something that I grew up with and always thought was completely normal, that a father should protect their daughter until the very last minute when the daughter gets married. But by reading through the conversation and by participating in that conversation, I was able to find the fallacy in that kind of bias, and that means that now I have something that I can work on. I have an area of myself that I can improve. When I see people talking about religion, when I see people talking about education, I can see similar things. It's, here's the problem, and here's why it's a problem, and this is what we need to do to fix it. Or even if there are no solutions, these are the problems that need to be solved. And so that's a great resource for people who want to think about solutions for the coming generations.
I couldn't agree more, actually. I also find that very, very interesting. And also, frankly, apart quite apart from the sorts of things you've mentioned, I get an understanding of how people are thinking about technology and the future and all sorts of other things the same way. But one of the things that's interesting is that, you know Storify, presumably. How do you take those discussions, which are permanent? I mean, with app.net, they remain there, those debates, those discussions. But, you know, coming to them late, there are asides, there are tangents. I wish there were some way, or maybe we should just take it upon ourselves to do it, to turn those debates, discussions into something more readable, something like a blog post or something like that. Do you think that'll ever happen, or do you think it's up to us as individuals to say, oh, that discussion about X is worth turning into something?
Well, we can pretty much do that now with Firesides. Firesides is a very interesting platform in that the conversations that people have in a patter room are put online and they're always available. They're always indexable and searchable. One option, and I haven't spoken to Fam or Yasmin about this, would be to fork Firesides so that it pays attention to conversations that have a specific tag or conversations that have been submitted to the Firesides roundtable, so to speak. And this way, these important conversations on hot topics can be indexed and archived and made available for the Googles, the Yahoos, and the Bings to come by and index. And ideally, we should be able to continue contributing to these conversations, because something that is deemed acceptable in 2014 may be completely unacceptable in 2025.
Right. What do you like to be known for?
I like to be known for providing solutions. I am a solutions provider. At the end of the day, that's all I am. People often come to me with problems or questions, and I give them answers, whether they want them or not.
Will you say whether people want those answers or not? And we know who follow you that sometimes you're in the position of providing or not providing technical support to family members. Does it frustrate you that you have solutions and they really don't want them?
My solutions are not always the best solutions.
For the individual.
That's right. I find solutions to problems very quickly. Like I said, this is what I do very well. But a lot of times people don't want solutions. They just want someone to listen, someone who understands. This is something that I've been trying to learn with my wife, who will, like any other human, talk about her day and express frustration at certain episodes. She doesn't want me to provide solutions. She just wants me to understand and offer a shoulder. It's the same thing at work. People will complain about colleagues, and they don't want me to say, well, why don't you stop being a jerk? Instead, they want me to say, oh, you're right. You know, this person so-and-so was completely inconsiderate for not responding to your asinine remarks.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about how you came to be in Japan, and you say quite often that you're not going to go back to Canada. Tell me about how you came to be in Japan and why you like it there.
Well, the easy answer would be my wife is Japanese.
Did you meet her in Japan?
No, I actually met her in Canada twice, but she's very close to her family, and so it was much easier for us to decide to live here rather than asking her to live an ocean away. More than this, when we met, I was living in Vancouver. That is about 5,000 kilometers away from my nearest family member. So moving across the Pacific, which is another 7,500 kilometers, that's really a non-issue. Far is far. Would I like to live in Vancouver again? Oh, sure. That's a great city, but I don't feel attached to a piece of dirt. Whether I'm living in Vancouver, British Columbia, Kasugai, Japan, or Timbuktu, so long as there are no bullets flying over my head, it really doesn't matter where I live. We are all on the same planet.
You say you would be content just about anywhere, and I think that's a wonderful state of mind. For those of us who've never been there, Japan seems like a very different culture. And from some of the things I've read that you've said on ADN, it's a very different culture, which you will never be part of, although you will understand it. Is the challenge of dealing with a very different culture, is that for you something rewarding or something that will always be a bit of a headache?
I think the easiest way to answer this would be to say I have always been an outsider. It's not because of technology, it's not because of OCD, it's not even because of autism, all three of which I have plenty of. It's just, that's the way it is with me. I don't understand humans. I study humans, but I don't understand how people interact with each other. So even back in my own family, I have always been an outsider looking in, which is very much what I have here in Japan. I don't expect this to change anytime soon, nor should it. I'm actually very comfortable being on the outside. Besides, being outside of a community doesn't mean that I can't still participate in that community from time to time. More than this, like living in Japan, when I was in Canada, the immigrants that I met in Canada knew that the first generation always had the hardest time. No matter how hard they tried, no matter what they did, they would not be completely Canadian, so to speak. They would be welcomed, they would be accepted, but there would still be a little bit of a distance. Children, assuming I ever have any, children don't have that same problem. They are more easily accepted by a community. So if I'm excluded, so be it, but I know that my children will not have the same problem.
Good. Well, thanks so much, Jason. And now, you know, the question you ask everybody and that everybody struggles with slightly is to nominate three people on ADN that you would recommend people to follow.
One of the nice things about creating the show is that you get to also create the questions and then think about the answers well in advance. So the three people that I would recommend would be Sumudu, Patrick Roan, and Mimi.
Mm-hmm. Why?
I recommend Sumudu because he is quite the interesting individual. He works in the airline industry, but he's not a pilot. He has a very interesting set of interests. So he works with food in the airline industry, and he is trying to create a website where he has pictures of the galley, which is a very specific niche. I think that's a very interesting area to look at when it comes to aviation. Everybody thinks of the pilots or the cockpit, things of that sort, but here we have a different look. With Patrick Roan is incredibly thoughtful. When I was first introduced to the man through the Enough podcast, I didn't like a lot of what he had to say, but the more I thought about it, the more I weighed his words, the more valuable his ideas became. his concept behind enough, his concepts behind all of his activities are absolutely inspiring. I can't really think of a better way to describe it than that. So by looking at Patrick Roan, by seeing what he's doing, he inspires me to not only be a better person myself, but to go ahead and create things that didn't exist the day before. And the third person, Mimi has some of the most beautiful photographs on app.net. Every day she posts a picture of the lake that she lives nearby in the morning as well as in the evening. And so we get to see sunrise and sunset over this absolutely pristine environment. And it's just so incredibly peaceful. I love looking at those pictures.
I'm sure she'd let you have them.
Yeah, and more than that, she never has anything negative to say. I've never heard her say a strong word about anything. She's just a really good person to follow.
Well, Jason, let me take this opportunity to say, first of all, thank you for sharing some of your life on Discover ADN, and thank you even more for creating Discover ADN, because I think it really, it's meeting a need. And I think the success of the podcast is testimony to your ability to see the need and produce the solution. So on behalf of the whole ADN community, I think, thank you.
Well, thank you for hosting this show.
It's been fun. Thank you very much. This concludes the 22nd episode of Discover ADN. Once again, I'd like to thank Jason Irwin for taking the time to chat with me. Show notes for today's episode can be found online at discoveradn.10centuries.com. That's the number 10centuries.com. And I'd also like to thank our sponsor for this episode, Born SQL. Have a nice day.